I'm Kim Singletary.
And I'm Rich Collins.
And you're listening to Biz Talks,
a weekly conversation with local business leaders about topics affecting New Orleans and Southeast Louisiana.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Biz Talks. I'm Kim Singletary, the managing editor of Biz New Orleans Magazine. And this week is actually a continuation, part two of last week's podcast. So if you did not catch last week's podcast, episode 182, go on back and listen to that one first, and this will make a little more sense. This is a conversation with New Orleans native Frank Rabelais, and it is basically hitting back on the all too common negative attitude regarding New Orleans and the city. And so we had so much good news to talk about that it took up two podcasts. So this is the second part. We're going to get into in this part how we change the mentality, how do we go about doing that, and why right now is the perfect time to do it. Thanks for listening. We talk about the road work too, which is an interesting one because when people do come here, our roads is one thing that we definitely will realize very quickly.
Oh, yeah.
you are off-roading way more than you would like to. But the good part of that, when you're seeing all this like crazy just construction going on, is when you're doing construction, it's because you're creating something that's going to be better and new.
Absolutely. And it's about resetting expectations too. I think one of the biggest benefits to Katrina, which was certainly a tragedy, make no mistake, but one of the biggest positive developments to come out of Katrina is I think in so many ways it reset expectations. It reset expectations around education, around governance, around flood protection, and around infrastructure, definitely. And so the road work that is underway now, not everyone realizes that the road work is mostly being funded by the Katrina road settlement, which was finalized by the city only in 2015. It took 10 years of dickering with FEMA to get to a final road settlement. So all of this road work, 80% of it basically is being funded by this FEMA road settlement. And so that's incredible. It tells us, I think, to recognize, unfortunately, how slowly things progress, right? So perhaps we must recognize we're in a marathon. It's not a sprint. This is a multi-decade effort of recovery that really we're still in the midst of, arguably. But also the end product of all this, within 3 to 5 years, the condition of streets within Orleans Parish is going to be easily the best it's ever been in my lifetime. And to the degree that resets expectations and makes people willing to fund continuing maintenance and ongoing improvement, that's going to be really valuable. Because in the pre-Katrina periods, we were kind of stuck in this trick bag where people were unwilling, residents and taxpayers, were so often unwilling to fund the investments that were necessary with regard to infrastructure, with regard to public education, because those systems were so poor. It was kind of like, why should I be giving money to this failing system? If we're able to reset expectations, and instead of that prevailing, the pitch is, look, this is a system that's gotten a lot better, but we still have more to go. To get better still, we need resources. Here's our vision. Can you, citizens, taxpayers, provide us with the resources to make this vision a reality? That's much more compelling. And hopefully that's where we're arriving, both as a city and a region.
Well, and as we're doing this, I talked to you, head of sewage and water board. As we're doing these streets too, they're looking at all the pipes under the ground and making improvements there too. So it's double,
we're looking at this. Oh, it's agreed. I mean, it's accomplishing a lot. Every time the streets are fully reconstructed, as opposed to just, scraping off the asphalt, the mill and overlay, and then they lay a new layer of asphalt. Every time these streets are completely reconstructed, yes, that's my understanding. The Sewage and Water Board is putting in entirely new drainage lines, entirely new sewer lines, entirely new water mains. And that's so valuable. I know individuals, for instance, who have moved to the Florida Panhandle. The Florida Panhandle, Walton County, and kind of the Destin region, they have attracted a good number of New Orleanians since the beginning of the pandemic. And obviously you hear how marvelous the infrastructure is. And my reply to those people have been like, well, I hope so. I mean, none of it's more than 30 years old, you know, versus our infrastructure. Every single press release that the city puts out touting the completion of a roads project, lately it's included some kind of accompanying statement on the part of the Sewage and Water Board General Superintendent that reads something like, the water mains in this area were 105 years old. They've done their time. We are delighted to have new modern water mains in this area. And so, I think that's all going to make a big difference. And if it's not being felt yet, I think we're feeling it some, but if it's not being felt yet, I think in 3 to 5 years, I can pretty confidently predict that a lot of people are going to begin to notice those benefits.
I mean, I can't remember the last time we had a boil water advisory.
Exactly. And that's huge, because I think sometimes of our post-Katrina sentiment as a city and region, we were really all in it together, right? It was this big rebuilding effort. There wasn't a lot of dissent. There was a lot of everyone sort of pulling in the same direction. But starting around 2015, 2016, that feeling began to wane somehow. And part of what brought about that waning, I think, were the repeated boil watery advisories, citywide boil watery advisories. Well, guess what? $80 million was expended to construct two enormous water towers, which now loom over the treatment plant on Claiborne Avenue, and which can release water into the system to maintain the drinking water system's pressure to give the operator, the Sewage and Water Board, time to fix whatever issues have arisen so that we don't have a drop in pressure and that we don't have to institute a citywide boil water announcement. You're right. I mean, when was the last time that happened? It's been 5, 6 years, I think.
Yeah, it used to happen. We moved here in 2013. It happened all the time.
All the time.
2011. Sorry, we moved here in 2011. And that was something I'd never experienced before. Yeah. And
it's very demoralizing.
It's a lot.
And so, but why do city residents, we're understandably demoralized by experiencing repeated citywide boil water advisories, why are we not conversely encouraged by noticing, hey, this isn't happening anymore? Why is that story not getting out? Why are we not feeling, okay, you know, we got this. We're getting on top of these issues. I don't feel like city residents.
It gets replaced with
something else. Right. You know, and that's not to say that what the issue gets replaced with isn't a real issue. But I think what I'm trying to do, the whole thrust of this column that you all were so kind to publish, is to say, look, let's also consider our wins. We have to keep our wins foremost in our minds, and we have to place them alongside our continuing challenges, because we have made enormous progress. It is indisputable. That's the fact pattern.
And I think that's part of it, is that if you don't acknowledge the problems, then you're not going to do anything to fix them. So we're very good at acknowledging what the problems are, and we've done a
right
job of fixing them. But then, like you said, there has to be some balance. You can't just walk mm-hmm. doom and gloom all the time. You have to, when you talk about that whole, the bumper stickers, right, that were so popular, yeah, like proud to call New Orleans home. I saw one, God, it might have been, yeah, probably around that 2016 time, that said, New Orleans, we're all here because we're not all there.
Yes.
It made me laugh. But then now that I'm thinking about it, it's like, but that's not really the message that you want, you know?
No, that's not the mindset that the Texan possesses. And, you know, I do wonder why media framing so often reinforces this. And I commend Biz New Orleans for highlighting the very real stories of good news in the region, because I don't think too many other media outlets do it. But just to take a few examples. So for decades and decades and decades, we looked enviously at Atlanta, at Dallas-Fort Worth, these cities that had succeeded in constructing airports that were attracting serious numbers of nonstop flights, incredible connectivity. These regions possessed simply because they'd succeeded in constructing a new airport. So for decades, we talked about building a new airport in New Orleans East. We talked about expanding the existing airport. Talk. And then finally, in 2019, we get effectively a new airport. And it has been combined with a successful effort to attract a level of nonstop service that has never existed in this region. For decades, one of the key barriers to attracting corporate investments to our region has been our lack of nonstop flights, the poor connectivity. That's not an issue anymore. But how does the media report that? What mostly got reported were problems with the baggage claim and the fact that there was no flyover ramp accessing this new terminal directly from the interstate. That's what got the lion's share. Not for 40 years, we've labored hard to overcome this disadvantage, and lo and behold, we have. No, it was, well, you know, the bags aren't working right. You can't get to the airport from the interstate, you know? So that's it. That just typifies how we address these issues, how we frame them negatively.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think it's a whole mentality that, again, not being from here, it's helpful to talk to you to get some context of where this came from. And I'm just kind of curious, I guess, how you change it. I think Mardi Gras is, I think I wrote in my pub note for January or Ed note, Mardi Gras is a time where we see that kind of morale boost. And yes, we do appreciate, we're like, this is a time that nobody else gets. This is our time. And it's made possible by just individuals. Like, we don't, you're right. You know, you don't have corporate sponsorships. That's not, no, never has been. And right. So we just went to Jubakis, right? On Saturday night, it was freezing. It was absolutely freezing for us. Now, again, from Omaha, I'm talking to somebody down there, negative 45 with wind chill. So
right.
If we're complaining about the cold, I mean, we don't even come close, but we're out there and you just see the passion and the creativity and the work that goes into making that happen. And it gets bigger and bigger and bigger every year because more and more people want to get involved. And it's the excitement that you are there and you're seeing something that you don't see anywhere else. And yeah. And it goes on for weeks. That's another thing we learned moving here. It's not a one day thing. This goes on for weeks. And this mm-hmm. is a year where we have, I guess, the closest we have to a big city pride. And it's something that everybody looks forward to. It's way more than in the, you know, being in the streets. But when we moved here, we walked out the door and we walked into a parade setting that we've never seen in our lives. And we were, people around us were giving us food and welcoming us. And
I've mentioned it. I think I mentioned in my op-ed that I've been splitting time between here and Knoxville, Tennessee. Yes. And Knoxville, you know, people here are more polite, but less friendly. And I think maybe, you know, it's quite striking. And I think that you asked earlier, how do we change the mentality of locals? How do we start celebrating our wins and believing in ourselves? And I think part of it is to keep telling these stories. I mean, my hope is that this op-ed and this interview, this will encourage others to also begin to speak more positively about the real value they see here. And also it's not simply about concrete accomplishments, as I think you're alluding to. It's also about the actual values that we as New Orleanians seem to possess. There is a sense of community here and a mutual reliance that despite all of the problems that we have, despite the public safety issues, despite racial tensions, despite economic inequality, this city nonetheless seems to possess more of a sense of community, more of a sense of belonging 100%. than any other place that I've ever really come to know in this nation. Wow. That has enormous worth. That has enormous worth. And I am disappointed, for instance, that my children don't live in New Orleans all the time. I'm very disappointed by that. I think they're missing out.
Well, that do you know what it means to miss New Orleans, right? And that
Oh man,
and
yes,
I've
I do.
talked to people have, you know, and you move to the East Coast and guess what? They're not as friendly. You're not gonna, you know, I had people prep me when we moved here and they're like, you're gonna have people come up to you and just start talking. Like
I love it too, because you see, it expresses a degree of trust in humanity that is absent elsewhere. There is somehow, there is this trust in humanity, and it's the product of so many factors that are unique to New Orleans. Our compact geography, the fact that we weren't able to sprawl, again, to return to this matter of circumstances which for so long disadvantaged New Orleans, now advantage New Orleans. So our inability to very easily sprawl in the post-World War II period has resulted in a pretty darn compact region. I mean, if you set us alongside some of these other American cities, we're very compact. And that to me, I think it forces a sort of mixing and interaction that is absent elsewhere. And it appears as though the product of all of that at its best is more faith in humanity than you find in many other places in this country. Well, that's incredibly valuable. That's incredibly valuable. And we have to tout that. We have to promote that, and we have to embrace it and celebrate it.
Oh yeah, we can rally. We can rally like no place ever.
Yes.
Because we're used to, you know, when things go bad, that's what you need, right? You need to be able to rally. And but I think that we need to recognize when we don't necessarily have to, we're not in critical mode all the time. Like sometimes
no.
There's really good things that we can talk
right.
about, get excited over. And
yeah, the framing of things needs to change. I mean, again, the airport, instead of celebrating this win for the ages, practically, we ding it for these shortcomings that, you know, are real enough. But I mean, look, big picture, this was an amazing win. Another big win, the early childhood education millage. So I've been reading now lately, this has changed, but initially the media coverage around the early childhood education millage, which Orleans Parish voters passed in, I think, 2021, was basically, there will still be thousands of children who will not be enrolled in this. So again, it's kind of this reflexive glass, half empty take on things, rather than, for the first time, we as a city have embraced giving children who are disadvantaged, who are in disadvantaged households, the kind of leg up such that they might arrive in kindergarten ready to learn. I think I've read in more recent coverage that we are, I don't know, I think we have like the second most robust early childhood education program in the nation as a city. I don't know how that's measured, if it's on kind of expenditures per capita or percentage of eligible children who are being offered spots. But I mean, what we're doing here is incredible. How often do you hear that celebrated?
And like I said, as of 5 years ago, we had not a dime going into
not it. Not a dime going into it. Not a dime.
And if you're going to put money into something, that's what you put money into.
Right.
They've shown that lowers crime, a lot. And there's direct correlations.
Correct.
But the problems that we have, that's going to solve them. And it's not going to be immediately. And that's where I think... Yeah. It took so long is that people are like, well, you know, what's going to happen? Well, right now you're not going to see a huge amount, other than you are going to see a workforce that is supported, which we need. But the real, real solid benefits to it are going to be, you know, quite a while off. Right.
Yeah.
But when
and I mean, it's the same thing with the charter school system too. I mean, the post-Katrina educational system in Orleans Parish was turbulent for a while. I mean, it really wasn't until the early 2010s, maybe as late as 2014, 2015, that seven, eight, 9 years after Katrina, that the system had settled down. The operators who really were not doing a good job running schools were kicked out. Operators that were doing a good job running schools, they were encouraged to take on more schools. So it's really only been... It's been less than 10 years now that our current system of public education in Orleans Parish has matured and has stabilized. And the benefits of that are not going to be immediate, but I'd be pretty surprised if you don't see enormous benefits from that 10 years from now, for instance. But we have to stay the course in the meantime. We have to celebrate the wins. Again, from an early childhood education standpoint, for 40 years, I'd heard, all my life, I'd heard, you know, we have to fix education. We have to get education better. So now that we've made real progress doing so, we truly need to celebrate that and double down on it.
Yeah. When I was talking in my group, in the leadership group, and I said, you know, this is why we stayed. We actually stayed for the education.
Right. And I'm sure you're not alone. Yet how many people say, choose New Orleans because of the schools?
And actually, one of the people in my group said, I have never heard that. I have never heard someone say that they stayed here because of the education. And I'm like, well, you've heard it now, you know?
You've heard it now.
Yeah.
It needs to be repeated because it is a distinct competitive advantage that our city now possesses. And it did not 15 years ago. It did not 20, 30, 40 years ago possess that advantage.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and for Lee say that they didn't, as of a few years ago, have this. So more than that. I think you said, like, individually, even just when you talk to people, to get rid of that idea of only in New Orleans, if it's something that's right.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Yeah. You know, I don't have a magic wand, obviously, to bring about the change in sentiment. No one does, but it clearly will happen only through kind of the aggregate micro shift on the part of residents that live in the city. We all need to, like, I applaud, for instance, Michael Hecht. I think the last couple times that Michael Hecht has penned an op-ed, he's of course the head of GNO Inc. The last couple of times that he's penned an op-ed, he's urged all of us, all residents of the city, to pick one thing, pick one or two things, and just get engaged. Quit waiting for somebody else to fix it. Quit believing that it can't be fixed. Instead, you know, step up, get engaged. I mean, even if it just comes to reporting some issues on 311, many people seem to believe that 311 is a worthless mechanism. But in my experience, I've made, you know, over 100, probably 200 311 complaints in the last, I don't know, 5-10 years. Almost all of them get fixed. They get fixed. You know, now it doesn't take 24 hours. They're not fixed in 24 hours in most cases. Most of them get addressed within a couple weeks. And for those that don't get addressed, I start pinging my council member, and I've got that reference number. I'm like, you know, council member Green, 6 months ago, I reported this street light. It's still out. Here's the reference number. And in nine times out of 10, it is then resolved. So even those that don't get taken care of within a reasonable period of time, because this 311 system exists, I'm able to follow up in a way that was not possible for city residents 20 years ago.
And that's the danger, right? Is it, if you take that mentality of, like, well, this is just messed up and it's always going to be messed up and it's just, we're always just going to be this shit show, you know, that's not going to benefit anybody.
No.
It's not helpful. The people I always say, like, our new and notables class, it's one of my favorite things to do, because those are people who have jumped in and are engaged. And a lot of them have come from out of the city. It's because they're excited. They're looking at it going, I want to be here. And I see opportunity here that I don't see anywhere else to make a difference, to make a change.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're motivated and it's infectious.
And it's a real phenomenon. There has been an influx of new blood into the city post-Katrina. I think one of the interesting outcomes of that, there have been many benefits, but there's been concern expressed on and off that new people coming into New Orleans is going to stop being New Orleans. And I think that in the last 15 years, we've pretty conclusively proven that no, people come to New Orleans and they become New Orleanians. They embrace this culture. I mean, the rejuvenation of Mardi Gras, for instance, is an example of that. I think a lot of that, I get a sense that a lot of that has been catalyzed by newcomers coming into the city, taking this pre-existing tradition, this incredible folk cultural, you know, epic event that happens every year, and rejuvenating it by bringing new ideas and new passion. I mean, that's beautiful. That's exactly what you want culture to do. And it hasn't made New Orleans less New Orleans. It's rejuvenated New Orleans. It strengthens the best things about New Orleans. So I think that we don't need to be too worried about newcomers moving to New Orleans and somehow changing the city. I don't think so. I think the city changes newcomers more than not.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, just going to Chewbacca's on Saturday night, you saw that. I mean, like 10 years ago, we used to go and it was this little, little parade, right? And now it had like 100-something crews. Like it's
brilliant.
Ever, you know?
And it's just brilliant.
There's such a low barrier entry, right? So you can parade, and people have just taken it and just gone crazy with it. And you see it's exploded, and that's really cool. I mean, part of me is like, well, it was kind of easier when you could go 10 years ago. But
right,
that's what you want to have happen. You want to come.
You want, yeah, those are good problems to have. Yeah. You know, those are good problems. Like, there will be people that back when sentiment, for some reason, again, around 2014, 2015, and for a year or two, I thought it quite striking that within New Orleans itself, and maybe even throughout the region, there was this sense of optimism that you could feel it, and people were behaving as though the future of the region was bright. And when that happens, when enough people begin to believe that, then investment begins to get unlocked. Those dollars that people of means would invest elsewhere, or perhaps wouldn't spend at all, they start to spend that. They start to reinvest in their historic properties. They start to grow their business here. So we were feeling that. And then for some reason, that sentiment started to wane toward the end of the 2010s for some reason. But again, even if that sentiment were to return, there will be some people that will just immediately start grousing. Oh, you know, it's causing housing prices to balloon. Oh, you know, traffic is far worse than it used to be. Again, these are good problems to have. These are problems. They're challenges. But I'd much rather tackle the challenges that flow from growth and economic success than those that flow from disinvestment and decline.
That laissez le bon temps relais, right?
Right.
We should be living that a bit more. And I think this is the perfect time of year to get a little reinvigorated and go, okay, like let's embrace all year long the stuff that is good, that is different.
I agree.
And not just this time of year.
I agree. There's no shortage of good news. Yes, we still have serious challenges. Yes, we still have serious new challenges. But there is much to celebrate, much to celebrate. And I think a more balanced assessment as to where we stand as a region will be of benefit to all of us, because isn't it much more likely that we'll successfully attack our continuing challenges if we're doing so from a foundation of optimism and from a place of recognition that we've made such progress in so short a time? That's where you want to start from when you start talking about how do we address our insurance affordability crisis? How do we continue to better the public safety? How do we continue to make improvements on the infrastructure front? Attacking these, you know, admittedly real challenges from a place of optimism and recognition of the successes of the past is definitely a far better place to start from.
And maybe, you know, and that's another positive. I'll talk about my people coming in from, you know, from elsewhere, is that you do have people who have lived other places, have that reality that it's not idyllic. It's not idyllic everywhere else. It's not
You know, and we also need to guard against the phenomenon of remaining in contact with those, our friends, our family who have moved elsewhere. Well, look, they're incented to not talk down their own decision, right? So if we hear back from friends that are supposedly living the high life in suburban Nashville or doing well in suburban Denver, we probably should take that narrative with a bit of grain of salt, because their individual incentive is to not admit that they've made a mistake by moving away from New Orleans.
You know they have. You know they have. They just don't want to say it.
They just don't want to say it. So, you know, I think we have to guard against that too.
Yeah.
Because you're right. There are problems everywhere. You know, there are problems everywhere.
When my husband, when I have a bad New Orleans day, I hit a pothole or, you know, just stuff's gone wrong. I come home and every day my husband, he'll go, where else do you want to go? You want to go to Iowa?
Yeah.
Right. Like, look at that list. Look at the list of the top cities to live in the country. Do you want to live in any of those?
Right. Yeah. And that's part of the pitch. Part of the pitch is, you know, where else would be better? Yeah. But again, but we have to also incorporate, I believe, the kind of uplifting our own unique values, our superiority from a value standpoint, that there has to also be positive reasons to stay here. And we have to tell these true stories around why we remain here. Not only, well, you know, God, I could never live in, Denton, Texas. Good Lord. No, thank you. No, that's part of it. That's part of what we have to tell ourselves, probably. But also Denton, Texas, or McKinney, Texas, you know, far suburban Dallas, is going to be kind of this cultural desert. It will not have the sense of community that New Orleans has. It doesn't have this kind of up from the roots folk culture. It doesn't have the historic built environment and the walkability that Orleans Parish possesses. There's so much that it will not have. So that's also got to be part of what we tell ourselves and certainly what we tell visitors and potential residents who could move to New Orleans.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That always makes me sad that people get to the quarter and I love the quarter, but they don't get out of the quarter. You know,
yeah.
People that I know that come here for conventions or whatever. And I'm always encouraging them, like, come see the rest of the city. Come see that we actually live a majority.
Right.
And come to Mardi Gras with your kids, you know, and come, you know, like people don't think of us. They think of us in very different ways, and they don't think of it as a kid-friendly place.
No,
like kind of the New Orleans, Las Vegas Strip kind of a situation where it's like, come here, have a good time, make poor life choices, and go home. You know,
right? Yeah. No. Unfortunately, we've spent decades. It's only been in the last 10 years or so that we've tried to tell a different story, but we've spent decades characterizing New Orleans as Las Vegas on the bayou.
Yeah.
And that is what, you know, unfortunately, I don't know, 9 out of 10 Americans, that's kind of how they see us. And that's even how some residents view the place, which is even more perturbing. But you're absolutely right. I mean, the quarter, I actually was down in the quarter just a couple of weeks ago. Some friends from San Diego were visiting, and we walked, we parked off Esplanade on Bourbon Street, and we walked to Jackson Square, and then we walked up to Canal Street. We took the streetcar all the way up to Audubon Park, walked around the park, and then walked back through that beautiful University District neighborhood, stretching kind of downriver from Audubon Park to where we picked up the Magazine Street bus at Jefferson and Magazine. Took the bus back to Canal Street, walked through the quarter again. It was so exciting. The quarter, I don't know what happened the day we were scheduled to come down, but the quarter was spick and span. I mean, I haven't seen the quarter that clean in a long time, remarkably. And it was so exciting. It was so vital, clear blue skies. And again, my friend, he grew up here, but his wife did not. She's totally in love with New Orleans. He's now saying, he's in the biosciences. He's now saying, you know, for the first time since I left here in 2002, I think he left to go to Austin, I can see myself moving back here, plugging into the growing biotech industry here and living here once again. And his wife is just totally on board. I asked their darling little daughter, I said, I said, is this like San Diego, or is this city a little bit different? And she said, this city is really different. And she really liked it. 8 years old, you know, and she was just completely lit up by the charms and the authenticity of what we have, what we offer.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a parent, and like you talked about barbell parenting. I have a 13-year-old and a 2-year-old.
Okay, right.
Yeah. Wasn't really on purpose, but
no,
it worked out.
Exactly.
But having them grow up here, they have experiences that nobody else has. And it's
No.
funny though, because I talked to my eldest, and she doesn't I always tell the story, like she's never been to a parade that didn't have throws, right? So
Yes, that's right.
Disney, for the first time, I had to prep her emotionally that we were going to go see a parade. And I said, they're not going to throw things to you at this point.
I
It was really quiet. And then she looked at me
know.
and she goes, so they're just going to hand the things to you. And I started laughing and I'm like, no, there are no things. Like you just
That's right.
stand there if you want to parade. And she just looked at me like, why would we do that?
No,
And
that's right. That's
I'm like,
right.
I know. It's just that's how other people do things.
Yeah.
And
See, and these episodes that we're talking about, these anecdotes that we recount, all of us have anecdotes like this. And it's just a function of adding them up, putting them together, aggregating them, and speaking to one another about them. I remember in the years after Katrina, the former Times-Picayune columnist Chris Rose wrote a beautiful column about taking his young child, I think it was, to a Mardi Gras Indians gathering. I guess it was on Super Sunday or something. And this piece was just paragraph after paragraph. And Chris Rose is not a native of New Orleans. I think he's from the DC area.
that I
It
didn't
was just
know.
par yeah, it was just paragraph. Yeah, but he's been here since the 1980s, I think. So it was just paragraph after paragraph of, thank God I'm raising my child in this magical place. And that's the sort of positive narrative that we need to celebrate and that we need to tell each other. We just don't do it reflexively, but we need to start because there are good grounds for telling that story.
Absolutely. I think that's a perfect way to kind of conclude our ranting over all the here. But it feels good to do that, you know. And the one thing that I realize when I talk to people, whether it's our executives of the year, our new and notables, or anybody who's out there that we're really going, okay, these people are out there making a difference, is when I talk to them, they are all bullish about New Orleans. Every single one. And whether it's because they just came here or they're here and they're seeing the changes that are being made, and that's, you know, after so long, like you were talking about, that's making them excited. But that is one unifying factor, is they are not sitting back and going, well, this sucks, you know.
Right. It's always been this way. It'll always be this way.
There is no mentality that way. It's all completely like there is so much opportunity. There
Right.
is, and I that's how you get places. That's how you move.
Yes.
So, well, so awesome. I don't even know how to end this. I feel like we need to have a bunch of tea and just like, I don't know, crawfish and just do it up. But this is a perfect year to do, you know, go out and party.
Yes.
But to keep that going all year long, you know, I want to see more of those proud to be in New Orleans bumper stickers and.
Yes. And maybe a few fewer, maybe some, perhaps a smaller number of those that satirize the effort. So when that bumper sticker trend took off in New Orleans, it wasn't long before bumper stickers executed in the same font with the same colors were reading things like New Orleans, proud to call it hell, or New Orleans, proud to swim home. And you know, so we're funny that way. I mean, we're self-deprecating, that's good, but we need to dial that down a little bit, I feel. It's not justified and it's not helpful.
No, it's not, you know, and I, but you know, you go to some of those like Flirty Girl and Dirty Coast, and you can get some cool ones that talk about just how different, you know, we are. But you don't see anything negative about Mardi Gras, right? There's no
No.
You know, it's all I'm proud to be sidewalk side, I'm proud to be neutral ground side, I'm just happy to be
Right.
out, you know. It's and I think that if we do a little bit more of that, you know, that will benefit us all. And
Yeah, let's spread the Mardi Gras sentiment beyond just the few weeks of the season. Let's make it more of a year-round feeling. That doesn't mean we should drink year-round or get wrecked
no.
year-round. That's not what I mean.
At some point, you need to start that diet or
Right.
that
But
has to.
this sentiment, the feeling of pride, the feeling of love for this community ethic that we possess, and the way that we can all participate, and the up from the roots folk culture of the city, that exists year round. And if we could just celebrate that a bit more year round alongside the substantive accomplishments of the past 15 years, these incredibly transformational developments that we've managed to achieve, I think we'd start to really get somewhere.
Well, awesome. Well, Frank, anytime that you would like to contribute something, I know this is your passion, is talking about this, and I think we found such a good fit in you. In New Orleans, Biz New Orleans came out when you talk about 2014. Our first issue was October 2014, and
I remember it.
Michael Hecht was on the cover, and it was about selling New Orleans. And I think we need that now more than ever. And
I agree. And I mean, turning around a region is a multi-decade effort, you know. And I think there's grounds for believing that 20 years from now, we will look back on the run-up to Katrina itself, and the accomplishments post-Katrina as when the city regained its upper trajectory and became the place that we're celebrating today. I'm speaking of 20 years from now, the prosperous, equitable place with good culture and quality infrastructure that exists in, 2045.
So I will challenge people as you're going out to those parades and you're grabbing your king cake and you're grabbing your food that you can't get anywhere else that you have to ship to other people who are missing it because they left. Make that to try and make that mental switch and just see how it feels, just try it out and see what it would feel like to keep that. And keep it going in some way and to get involved in the things that was another thing that I wrote in an Ed note is like when something bad happens to someone and you say, is there anything I can do? That's not really the answer is just to think of something that you can do and just do.
Yeah,
And
I agree.
so if you are one of those people and everybody has those moments, then maybe the thing that bothers you the most, that's maybe where you need to put your efforts. And if we all did
100%
that,
agree.
the idea of what we can pull off, what you're going to see on these streets in the next few weeks, what we can pull off working together and with no corporate support, right? These are all people putting their own money, their own time, their own effort into making this happen. And if we could continue that citywide in other ways, other than a float going down the street, we could. It would be unbelievable.
Yeah, there'd be nothing stopping us.
So, but thank you so much, Frank. This has been super, super fun. Just having this conversation between two people who see the good things and want to talk about them. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
Well, I hope it's catching. It should be catching.
Yes, yeah, I agree. Let's pass this on.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your invitation. I really appreciate it.
Well, anytime you want to do some follow-ups and talk about some more good stuff, we are happy to get the word out.
Okay, thank you.
And thanks everybody for listening. And on the newsstands now, for the January issue is our top executives of the year, including our CEO of the year, Michael Sawaya, with the Convention Center, who is also doing amazingly huge things. But if you want to get more good news, pick up a copy. We've got another one coming up in February that I will tease that is going to have to do with the French Quarter and some image changes there that are underway. But yeah, keep us up, bizneworleans.com and on all of your newsstands around the city. So thank you so much. Thanks everybody for listening. Thanks for listening to another episode of Biz Talks. If you like what you hear each week, don't forget to rate us and leave a comment wherever you listen to your podcasts. And follow us on social media at Biz New Orleans. For more information or to contact us, please visit bizneworleans.com/biztalks.